Hi, this is Tim Lightfoot, the director of the Huff Eines Institute. I want to take a little bit of time to tell you about this great event that we have coming up, the Huff Eines Discussion 4. We do this every year, and this year it's November the 21st from 1 to 4 p.m. Central Time in the Annenberg Presidential Conference Center here on the campus of Texas A&M. If you're in the area, you're certainly welcome to attend. It's free of charge. You'll hear 9 speakers that are leaders in exercise science and human performance. They have all been picked because they have a great message to say, and they are great speakers. If you're not in our area, don't despair, because there are other ways that you can get to the Huff Eines discussion. If you look on our website, you'll find that there are 23 satellite sites around the country that will be simulcasting the event at the same time. If you're near one of those sites, click on it and contact and find out where that's at, and you can go see it there. We will be putting these videos up online probably right after the first of the new year, and so you'll be able to see them there. So we hope to see you there on November 21st. And now, on to the podcast.
Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huff Eines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huff Eines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huff Eines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Well, hello, and welcome to the weekly edition of the Huff Eines Institute podcast. We're so glad that you took the time to join us, and we are so excited to have another interesting person from the world of sports medicine and human performance with us. Today, on behalf of the Texas A&M Coaching Academy, as a member of our executive council for the Coaching Academy, we're pleased to have Coach Terry Price with us. Welcome to the podcast, Coach Price.
Thank you very much. Excited and glad to be here today.
We are as well. Excited to have you here. And I'm going to tell the folks a little bit about you,
okay.
And then we'll just jump right into the conversation. As I said, we're really pleased to have Coach Price with us. He's currently the Texas A&M defensive line coach. He's been busy the last couple of years. He played at Texas A&M in 1986 through 1989, played under Coach Jackie Sherrill and R.C. Slocum. We had a 34-14 record while you were here.
Not bad.
Pretty good record, yeah. Coach Price has coached at Texas Tech, Mississippi, Western Kentucky, and was at Auburn for 9 years, where he had 5 of his players that were drafted in the NFL. He's known as an incredibly great recruiter, played in the NFL himself. He played for the Chicago Bears and for the Miami Dolphins. He does have a bachelor's degree in sociology from here at Texas A&M, so he's done the complete loop. So we're glad that you're back with us.
No question. Glad to be here.
So you had a lot of experiences in football. What led you to coaching? What made you decide at some point, you know, I'd like to be on the other side of this, hollering at the players instead of being hollered at?
You know, it's funny. It was actually a casual conversation I had with an older teammate of mine that had gotten into coaching. Mm-hmm. He was actually coaching at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas as defensive coach. And I was getting close to graduation. We were in there working out one day in the old weight room, and he brought up the what he did, how much he enjoyed coaching, just told me a few details about it. It is something that really, really interested me. So I took his advice. I researched a little bit more. At the time, R.C. Slocum was the head coach, the same guy that coached me and recruited me. So I went back, talked to him about it, and R.C. said, hey, the best way to get into coaching here at the college level is to be a graduate assistant, or GA, which is just like an intern in any other business.
It means you work a lot of hours.
You work a lot of hours. Yeah, exactly right. Exactly, which is all part of it.
Yeah.
So, and it's funny, at the time, I did not have, there was no spots available. So I taught, I was a long-term substitute teacher in the Bryan-College Station area for a year.
Wow.
And when a graduate assistant job opened up at A&M, I took it, and the ball kind of rolled from there.
So you substitute taught for a year?
I taught every grade from seniors to kindergartners. Kindergartners, as big as I am, is a unique experience, trust me. It's a lot of tying shoes and wiping noses and all that stuff, but I've seen it all.
Well, it's interesting you talk about how that conversation with one person changed everything for you. And it's
exactly.
Interesting, so many people we talk to here, that's the same thing. They say, you know, I never really had thought about it.
Right.
And then somebody had this conversation with me, and it's like, wow.
It's really a unique message, and it's funny because I have former players, you know, one or two a year call me. Say, Coach, I want to get into coaching, what I need to do. And I always like to lay it out for them. And a lot of times you wish the message was out there where they could know about it ahead of time and get a head start on it, because it's a great career. It's a great profession. It's challenging, obviously, at times. But if you have a background in sports or just really, really enjoy being around the game, I mean, it's a great profession for a lot of people out there. So, yeah, I definitely try to pass the word on out to just people in general, some of my former players, and help them kind of lead the pathway for them getting into coaching.
Off the top of your head, how many of your former players are now coaching you?
Oh, my goodness. It'd be hard to give an exact number, because, you know, some of them are, you know, stuck in with some NFL teams. Some are at the high school level. They're kind of all over. But I've had some of my guys that are currently coaching and having a great time coaching. And I had I've had one of my favorite players about – 3-4 months ago called me, and he wanted to get all my drill tapes and all that stuff because he started to coach again. So it's fun to see that and get a chance to help these guys as they get going into this profession.
Yeah. One of the things that we've talked about here, especially when we've interviewed athletes, is the student athlete experience. And I think one of the things that people don't appreciate is how difficult it is to be a student athlete.
No question.
Because both are full-time jobs.
It is two full-time jobs. And a lot of people don't realize that. I think a lot of fans sometimes will see people. It's funny, I've had that before. Coach, what do y'all do when it's not football season? Or what do the guys do when it's not Saturday night in Kyle Field? I mean, a lot of work goes into it. So not just I mean, our players will get up anywhere from 5 o'clock to 5:30, you know, for a 6 o'clock workout or a 6 o'clock treatment session, and work out in the morning time, then go to class all day long, then practice in the afternoon. I mean, it is a full day for those guys. So that's something I think a lot of the public didn't realize. It's really hard work, but it's fulfilling work because, again, for our guys, the joy they have on Saturday and playing in front of the home crowd, especially here at Texas A&M, is well worth the long days and the hard work that they put into.
Yeah. Now, how is, just reflecting back over your own career, how has being a student athlete changed, do you think, since your time here with the folks now that are student athletes?
Well, I think technology's changed as far as, how the workout plans are a lot more complicated now. The plyometrics, different way you work your body, and different kind of technology you use in the weight room, I think, has changed quite a bit. We have in our weight room now, we have video cameras set up with videos your lifts and measures your explosion, counts your reps. Our guys can actually go home at night, log on the computer, and watch their lifts from that previous day. And we had nothing like that back years ago. So I think that part of it's changed quite a bit. I think it's still about hard work, though. I mean, regardless whether it's 30 years ago or today, you get what you put into it. So you still have to work hard, but I think the technology has definitely helped, especially on the conditioning side of it.
Yeah, you and I played athletics about the same time, and if I recall correctly, about that time, things were changing where it became athletes would go home during the summer.
Oh, yeah.
And nowadays that doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen anymore. As a matter of fact, going to my junior and senior year, you know, we were required to come second semester, and we could stay home first semester. So we're still willing full time now. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously it's obvious. Every school in the country, you got to spend the whole summer on campus getting ready for the next season. So it's definitely changed. Because like you said, you used to, back years ago, training camp 2 days, that's when you got into shape.
Right.
Now you have to be in shape when camp starts to compete for your position and obviously have a great football team.
If you're not in shape at the beginning of fall camp, you won't be playing.
You'll fall behind real fast. That's right. It'll take a long time to catch up if you do catch up.
Yeah, that's right. So let's talk. There's seems like there's been an increase in the number of coaches for a football team that are out there. And Justin Moore, we did a podcast with Justin Moore, and we talked about that increased number of personnel. And I know you were a strength and conditioning coach at one time in one of your positions. Do you do much now with them? I know we have a strength and conditioning staff, but I mean, do you oversee that? Is that just defensive line and
I think that the higher level football you play, it becomes more specialized. Mm. When I was assistant strength coach, I was at a 1AA school. We had limited budgets, so I was a D-line coach, weight room coach. We had a guy to coach receivers and also coach special teams, and we had, you know, everybody had two or three roles on the staff because, again, you don't have, you know, 3 or 4 weight coaches like you do here at Texas A&M at a small school like Western Kentucky, like it was back, 20 years ago.
Right.
So I think at this level of football, the highest level of football in the SEC, things become more specialized. We're able to have a 3- and 4-man, strength coaching staff, have our own nutritionist, have people that work in academics all day and all night for athletes. I mean, Heck, back in those days, you know, one of the coaches had to be the academic advisor and help put the schedule together. So it's changed quite a bit, become a lot more specialized.
I bet you don't miss that part.
I don't miss it at all.
The schedule. I would guess with that kind of diversification of talent or coaching, it's becoming more and more like the NFL.
Is it
mirroring the NFL in the coaching aspect?
I agree. I think just, again, that the specialization, you know, have enough – and really you talk about – even from a coaching point of view. Now the coaches all have graduate assistant coaches. There's interns. There's all kind of, you know, volunteer coaches. There's a lot of people and personnel that can help us now on the football field. So, you know, there's a lot more personnel in all areas than it was 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah. Now we do play football here at a high level. And
yes,
so we recruit the best student-athletes we can. Of those student athletes, do most of them come in thinking that they want to play professionally, go in the NFL? Or?
Every last one of them do. I mean, every last player, I go through that a lot of times when I first get here and get to camp, you know, one of the first meetings, who wants to play in the NFL? And they all raise their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I always followed up with is, okay, if you want to play in the NFL, guess what? You better be the hardest working guy in the weight room. You better be the hardest working guy in the football field. Because, number one, it's hard to get there. Number two, it's hard to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people all the time, the average NFL career, I think, is 2.8 years. And I tell people my story. I was Mr. Average. I got 2 years of NFL football under my belt. And like a lot of people that have that chance, they all think they're going to go play in the NFL for 15, 20 years and retire one day and go fishing every day. Well, it didn't work out for me like that.
Yeah.
I was very average. I got 2 years of professional football in. Now you're 23 years old. What are you going to do?
Right.
So that's one of the things I preach to the guys on our team now. That's why your education is important. Some guys come with the mindset coming out of high school, school secondary, I'm just going to go play ball and go pro. I said, no, it don't work like that. Even if you're lucky enough to play professional football for 2-3 years, you're 23, 24 years old, you still got a lot of living to do.
Mm-hmm.
So stay in those books. That's very, very important.
Yeah. What are you going to do after that?
What are you going to do when you get done?
Yeah, when you're playing. I know we were talking to some recruits, and we said, after your playing career is over, what
That's
are you
right.
going to do?
That's right.
And they
they
don't know.
They don't think about it, so I make sure they think about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I can remember being 18.
No question. I didn't think about it when I was 18. That's why I take it upon myself to make sure these guys know.
Yeah.
I take it personal. I went to school here. I played here, so – when a student-athlete comes through Texas A&M and is part of a football program, it's not just my responsibility to make sure they're a great player. I want to make sure they're a great person, have a chance to follow the path I had, and the fact that they get a great degree, play football at the highest level, and they're put in position to be successful when they get out of here. So that's why I kind of put a lecture in and making sure they understand how important that education is.
Excellent. We have to talk a little football anyway, especially since the game's changing.
Right.
Spread offense becoming more and more prevalent. The role of the defensive line in particular is changing, and linebackers.
That's
we talked to Coach Hagan before about the linebacker side of things. What kind of fundamental changes have you seen in what your defensive linemen have to do now?
Well, I think with the up-tempo offense, number one, because it's up-tempo, you have to be in great shape up front. You still have big guys out there that have to stop the run, but – I mean, they're snapping the ball every 20 seconds, opposed to the good old days where it took 2-3 minutes to get a playoff, it seemed like.
Right.
So you got to be in great shape, number one. Number two, you have to have, you know, 2 or 3 deep. You have to have depth because the offenses go so fast. Guys get tired because the offenses go so fast. So you got to have more depth to counteract these spread offenses so you can keep on chasing the ball sideline to sideline. And you got to have some guys that can rush the quarterback. Because, again, when they're throwing the ball 40, 50, 60 times a game, you have to have guys that can affect the quarterback.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the speed of the game. Recently, there was an effort to try to slow the game down a bit.
Yes.
So
that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen.
I mean, we pointed out several times that was a little bit – the reasoning that was put out there was a little bit ludicrous.
Yeah, it didn't make sense. There's no documentation that says all the things that some of the old-school coaches, you know, in the old-school offenses want to do, but there's no documentation. I think it's just – they're trying to make it self-serving to them.
Yeah.
And let the game be played as the game be played. As long as you're playing within the rules, which we are, like everybody else is, let's play the game and see what happens.
Yeah. There's always been some kind of a lot of attention to play to your base set. You know, is it a 4-3? Is it a 3-4? But it's at least it seems to me, and again, I'm just a casual observer nowadays, that it's almost a morph between the two because you've got some – at some downs, you've got guys playing down. You've got four down. You've got three up.
That's
some
true.
Downs.
That's
so it's like almost changes play by play.
And a lot of it's based on personnel. You know, back in the old days, you had 2 tight ends, 2 backs, and everything was played within a 10-yard box. Now, because they're playing with four wide receivers, five wide receivers. You have to match it up by personnel and defense. So if the team is in more of a run-looking offense, you got to play with four down. If they spread it out and go four or five wides, you usually go three down. So you get more guys in coverage to cover all those wide receivers.
Wow. So for somebody that's not in this on a day-to-day basis, how do you manage all the substitutions?
It is something that has to be practiced over and over again. I can promise you that. I mean, it's not easy because you may go first down a certain personnel. Second down, they change. They go from two backs to the five wides. Then you got to send another personnel in the game. Then on third down, they may change it again, and now you got to send another personnel group in the game. I mean, we have probably four or five personnel groups on defense that are ready at all times to go out there and play.
So is that your call as the defensive line coach during the game, or is that the DC's call?
The DC, obviously, the defense coordinator obviously calls the personnel groupings according to formation and what call he has. Mm-hmm. But as position coaches, we got to make sure if it's three down, we got the right three guys in there. If it's four down, we got the right four guys in there. If it's a short yardage or goal line situation, we got the right five guys in there. So just it's on us to make sure we substitute and get the right people in the game.
So it's really about personnel management.
A lot of personnel management. One guy goes down. He gets an ankle turn. Now, you got to pull up your sheet, all right? Now, you that are a second-teamer, you go to first team at this position, all right? You move over to this position. I mean, there's a lot of things that happen when one or two guys go down. So you have to juggle that and keep that maintained as well because, again, one or two injuries, you still need to have five guys out there when you go goal line. You still need to have three guys out there when you go, you know, penny group. So it's a lot of management on the sideline.
So how much videotape do you spend watching per week? Because I think that's another change is that there is so much more information now available.
So much more, yes. Even though I remember the old days, people used to have to send game film by FedEx or truck it or drive it or whatever to get. Now it's all online. So even in our league, every game in our league is online. We just go to a website, pull it up, and it's there. So that's changed quite a bit as far as game film is concerned. So a lot of our time is spent studying game film, tendencies, you know, what they do offensively, you know, what they do in the run game, the pass game. That's how we formulate our game plan. So a lot of our time is spent watching tape.
I know the philosophy is we focus on the game that's in front of us. We don't think about what's going on down the road.
Right.
But surely you guys prepare for the stuff that's happening down the road. About how far out in advance do you start looking at tape for upcoming opponents?
Well, As full-time coaches, we truly take it one game at a time.
Okay.
We go one game at a time. What happens is we have graduate assistants, we have student assistants, we got interns. They always go a week or two ahead of time.
Hmm.
So we play a game on Saturday. When we get in there Sunday and start grading the film from Saturday night and then starting on our next opponent, all the information we need, all the statistics we need, it's all ready for us. The film's already broken up, how we need to watch it. So they always get ahead of schedule. So when we start on Sunday, we don't have to take all day or 2 days to get the information organized.
So you can just focus on the upcoming opponent the next week, and you've got other people that are doing it.
Exactly.
So,
right.
So you must have a lot of trust in your GAs that are breaking that film down in advance.
You have to have good GAs. Without a doubt, you have good GAs. And it's a thankless job. I've been one. I mean, there's not very many full-time coaches at this level that haven't been GAs.
Right.
It's a thankless job, but it's a job where you learn a lot about the profession, and it helps you become a better football coach when you do get a chance or an opportunity to be a full-time football coach.
It's that apprenticeship thing, isn't
it? No question. Same thing.
I've talked with other folks, other coaches, and one of the things they say, especially in football, it helps to know people.
No question. That's important. That's how I got my first really big job. I was actually here as a graduate assistant in 1994. Mm-hmm. Tommy Tuberville was the defensive coordinator, and I left. My first full-time job was at Western Kentucky University. Mm-hmm. The head coach was Jack Harbaugh. His son, Jim Harbaugh, who was – coaching now for the 49ers, was a teammate of mine with the Chicago Bears, so there was a connection there.
Sure.
And then when Coach Tuberville took the job at Ole Miss as a head coach, we'd worked together when I was a GA here at Texas A&M. So, again, those connections obviously helped me get me involved in the coaching profession, helped me get started. So it's a lot about who you know in this business. It really is.
So if someone is shy and introverted, that's going to be tough for him.
It's a struggle. I'll be very honest with you. I'm not going to lie to you about that. I've seen some guys, and I've had to, I'm not going to say counsel some guys, but I got some former players that are kind of low-key. I just tell them, hey, you got to have a little personality about yourself because part of the job is coaching. A big part of the job is recruiting, going into homes. It's just like sales, selling yourself, selling your program. And you have to have a energetic approach. I mean, you're not going to buy a car or a house for anybody from somebody that's kind of, you know, real low key, real slow voiced. I mean, it doesn't really make for a selling atmosphere. I mean, you gotta you gotta be excitable. You gotta have some, you know, some as we say in the football term, we have some juice about yourself where you're excited, and that's all part of the presentation. So you have to have a little bit of personality to be good at what we do in this business.
Yeah. I would bet that I would think that one of the things that you can sell when you're on the recruiting trail is the fact that we have 38,000 students at our games.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What kind of effect does that have on the team during the game?
Well, I think just the 12th man here, just the tradition that we have as far as that's concerned. I mean, we have the largest student. We have the largest amount of students in the country that come to games to support us. It means a lot. Mm-hmm. It means a lot. Our guys understand that. They know that. I think we just broke a record for having the most students at a football game. So it energizes our players. It gets them fired up for the game. And, again, the crowd, the students, the yells, the cheers, it just it makes for the best environment in college football.
Well, it certainly helps, I think, our college student body feel like they're more of a part.
Oh,
of
they're
the team.
Our part. Yeah, that's especially here more than anywhere else. I mean, we're the home of the 12th man. So I think our students understand that, and that's why we have more students than anywhere else in the country. Come support our players and come support our football team.
Yeah. Coach, it's been great having you here.
Thank you.
We're going to start wrapping up here.
All right.
So as we do with all of our guests, we give them an opportunity to tell us their a take-home message. What do you want everyone to remember from this podcast?
Well, I think the most important thing to remember for a lot of guys out there that want to get into coaching is understand, number one, it's been a great profession for myself. Mm-hmm. I've enjoyed it. It's given me a chance to stay close to the game I love. Mm-hmm. It keeps me young. And for all the young guys out there that are thinking about it or want to get into it, I want to without a doubt say it's something you ought to pursue. I don't care whether it's middle school, high school, college pro, whatever your desire to or whatever the level you want to coach at, get involved. Mm-hmm. You know, research it. Talk to some of your former coaches. If you were a high school player, talk to some of your former high school coaches. If you played in college football, talk to some of your former college coaches. You know, if you're a former college football player, think about becoming a graduate assistant and getting involved in the coaching process. But it's a great profession, and just, you know, I think that a lot of people don't realize or understand how to get into it. So research it, look into it, because, again, it's for somebody that's been involved and played the game, I think it's a great, great profession for a lot of young athletes out there.
Just go say hello to people.
Go say hello.
That often helps.
The doors open up for you once you go research and check on it.
That's right. Well, again, thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure to have you.
Yes, sir.
Us.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And so, as regular listeners of the podcast know, this is the time that we also have the weekly podcast question. And here with the podcast question is Ayland.
How is the defensive line changing to fit new age offenses?
Great podcast question. Please be the first one to send us the correct answer at huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. And if you're the first one to send us that answer, then you'll win one of those nifty podcast t-shirts. And so it's never too late to win, so send it in. And so, again, I want to thank you all for taking the time to download us. Let's thank our guest again, Coach Price. I hope that you all take the time to download us next week when we have another interesting person in the world of sports medicine, human performance, and coaching. Until then, have an active and healthy week.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Ayland Letzinger and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sidney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.